Well, we'll get it. I'll save it for the interview or the segment.
You got Trevor Boyes on the show?
He's dead, so that's
I was going to say, you might want to check your credentials on that one.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made mistakes. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. We love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks, welcome to Meet Me at Applebee's. We're taking a field trip today, though, to the local Chinese buffet for a huge buffet of motorsports and fried shrimp.
That's good.
And other bullshit. Once again, it's me. I'm Brian Kay. I'm here with Ashley and Rob. Folks, how we doing this week?
We're here.
Yeah, we're when you're here, you're family over here at the Happy Star across the street, tucked over by the Dollar General. And boy, this place is hopping right now. And there's carpet everywhere. It's crazy.
I can't remember any of the buffet's names from growing up. They were all just very,
just called
very
a Hibachi Grill.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's like it's either like something like, you know, Happy Garden, Lucky Star, or something like that. Or there's a number involved, or it's just like exactly what the place is.
Yeah, in the more rural parts of the country, it's just, this is what it is.
Chinese food. Yeah. You fucking fat fucks. Come on in.
Well, now that we've got our eating habits out of the way, there was a bunch of racing this weekend. All sorts of shit happened.
So much racing this weekend.
I don't even know where to start. I didn't see all of it, but I saw some of it. So, Rob, take the lead here. What are we talking about first?
Wow, God, I don't even know where to start. There was so much short track shit that happened. The Oxford 250 was this weekend. I wasn't about to pay $75 to watch it, so I watched the highlights later. Congratulations to Cole Butcher for picking up the big Oxford 250 win. God, NASCAR mods, smart mods, Kyle Bonsignor, the other one, won at Langley. Hudson O'Neill fucking won some races in the Lucas Oil Series. Bobby Pierce is winning shit. Logan Schuchart went back-to-back over the weekend just because you bought that T-shirt. It gave him all the jazz he needed, Brian, to keep things moving.
Perfect.
Carson Quaffle won again, came from the back at the Cars race. But I think what everyone wants to talk about here is the big show at Daytona.
Hold on, that was really something. I got one little thing, and your regular Kenny Tremont update. He won his 142nd race of all time. First race he won of 2023. Could be his last because it's, I think this coming weekend is the last regular race at Lebanon Valley. But he won. At least he got one more victory before he hangs it up. So I was very excited to see that. But yeah, Daytona, I guess, is where all the major shit happened, huh?
Yeah, everyone's kind of looking at that, I would assume. True Love, do you watch any short track shit or anything else this weekend? I know we had IndyCar and Formula One and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that ARCA trucks. Watched it all the major TV stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's start on Sunday. Brian, did you watch the truck race at Milwaukee?
I didn't. Let me just preface this because we're going to talk about it a little bit when we get into the Daytona stuff. It was a big wrestling weekend for me this weekend. I mentioned it last week on the show, but there was a very big wrestling show in Cleveland on Saturday. And that led to me kind of watching the big race, which, again, we'll get to that later. But Sunday, there was a huge, huge, huge pay-per-view from London, this company AEW, which is, you know, another wrestling company. So I was watching that all day, and I did not watch the truck race, unfortunately.
Yeah, I didn't watch the AEW show at all, but I did see plenty of people bitching about the attendance on the internet and that big photo of Wembley and how it's like, it's only half full, we can't sell out a show. It's like, these idiots are just like NASCAR fans. So
again, there are so many parallels. Lots and lots of parallels between the two. It's the more I still watch both, the more I see. It's fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah, the undiagnosed autism, the fucking focus on who shows up, stuff that has everything to do with nothing but what you're trying to watch, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, it's great.
Exactly. So yeah, what did happen Sunday? Because I didn't see it. Nothing.
You didn't miss a damn thing in that race.
Really? See, I like Milwaukee. I thought it was a pretty good race. Who the fuck won? Grant Enfinger. Forgettable Grant Enfinger.
Yeah. He won like every stage. Yeah.
Carson Hocevar almost had something for him, but they got the tire strategy wrong. He just got eaten alive on those last few laps, and Enfinger was able to gap him by a couple seconds. But I like the Milwaukee Mile. I'm glad to see it's back. I like that flat track style of racing, and there seemed to be a lot of grooves. But I don't know. It was a Fox broadcast too, so it was a little clunky, and all the shit that you've learned to not like, especially after seeing NBC do pretty well with the NASCAR content recently. But I like Milwaukee. I heard it was kind of a shit show for the fans who were there. There's like hour-long waits for food, and they ran out like halfway through, and they were only expecting like 4,000 people to show up, but then like 10,000 people showed up, and everyone was fucking just classic, you know, state fair track management shit going on right there.
Jesus.
But and that was the same problem that they ran into when IndyCar was still going there about 10 years ago. And you know, it's a legendary place. It's been open over 100 years, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And you want to see shit happen there, and I'd love to see the Cup Series there, but it sounds like they got some work to do before they're able to handle a show with even more people than that. But that's my take on it. True Love, you have anything else? Yeah, I know it was kind of a not the most exciting race, but
wasn't there some comments made afterwards about, I don't know who said it, about the 98 cheating?
Oh, it was Carson Hocevar.
And then all that came out yesterday.
Yeah, saying they got their magic powers taken away?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Ty Majeski's team got busted for doing something with a tire. I would imagine that means some sort of bleeder, or maybe it has something to do with the type of air being put into a tire that got added to the rule book a couple weeks ago. Maybe they thought they could be slick and get away with something with that. But, it seems like Ty is in deep trouble. So,
well, I mean, they took 75 points away from him, but it doesn't matter because he's already won this round. So he's already on to the next round.
Yeah, exactly.
So just a little tap.
That's why I say big trouble, because it doesn't really mean much fucking anything. But that's big time stock car playoff racing right there for you. None of it fucking matters. So.
Not at all.
Let's talk about something you did watch. You watched Daytona, right, bud?
So I watched. Let's talk about Friday first, because Friday I paid very close attention. I was about to say, speaking of playoff points and all that, Trevor Bayne. Listen, I went into this race as someone who, we've talked about this before, how
you
I saw
money
Trevor.
On Trevor Bayne.
Well, not just that. So Trevor, I have a weird history with Trevor. Obviously, he's a winner of the first 500 I ever went to. Pissed me off so bad that I threw an apple on the track and called him the next Derek Cope. 12 something years later, I'm rooting for him in the Xfinity series, and I'm thinking he's got this. He was up front for a good portion of the race. I think at the first stage, maybe he was in the back, but. End of stage two. Yeah. He was in the mix. End of fucking stage two. He almost takes out the whole goddamn field for no reason at all. Like, trying to win the stage when he's not even in the playoffs. He has no need for playoff points. But still, like, made a very bad move. And then the next stage ends up actually taking himself out and taking out half the field. So not that I was going to win, this month's mortgage payment on Trevor Bayne, but I was very pissed off to see the stupid moves that he made. Also, he definitely, like, left John Hunter out to dry once or twice, too, not giving a fuck
That's
about
fine.
His teammate. So, you know, for a guy who's trying to get a ride next year, he really did not do a good job of proving he deserves one.
Yeah, he's definitely fast, but yeah, definitely a little, you know, some squirrely ass shit going on out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Happy birthday, Trevor Bayne.
I was disappointed to see Sheldon Creed almost get his first win. I mean, if he's gonna lose to anybody, Allgaier is a good person to lose to. Yeah. But
he almost
so
had
close.
Him.
To,
it looked like he lost the nose a little bit in four. Did you notice that? Like, it darted in. The nose of the car darted to the inside, and he caught it. And he had gotten loose on the back stretch too. So I think his car was just driving like shit or something like that, or the air got him screwed up. But yeah, I thought he was about to back that thing into the fence, but he managed to hang on to it and got second out of it. But yeah,
one of these days he'll pull it off. He's been so close. I don't know if it'll happen this year, but I would hope
it'll be the week that you don't bet on him.
I always put at least half a unit on him. Let's just say that.
There's your problem.
I got my faith. Listen, one of these times it'll pay off.
Maybe he wants you to stop betting on him.
Yeah. He called me up and said, please, for the love of God.
Brian can't keep losing these quarters every week on me. He's betting. Jesus Christ. So yes, that was the Friday race. I don't know what y'all have to say about it, but it was a good race. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Daytona is by far the best of all of the super speedways and always will be. Yeah. It doesn't get strung out, or not strung out, but like single file the way Talladega does. It's nice and big and fast like Atlanta isn't. I know Atlanta's a little more compact, and obviously it's going to race a little different. But, I mean, Daytona's the gold standard for that kind of shit. So it's always fun to watch, especially those Xfinity cars because they're so twitchy. Mm-hmm. But the Cup cars are pretty damn twitchy, too. So whatever they got going on sure. package-wise, that race is pretty good, too. So I guess that brings us to Saturday night.
Yes, and I will bow out now. So like I said, I had a full day of wrestling stuff. So let me just give you a little bit of insight on this wrestling show, because I know there's a portion of our audience that are my wrestling fan friends, and some of them were there. But this show, every August, there's a bar in Cleveland. It used to be called Now That's Class. Now it's just called No Class. It's like a punk bar right on the west side of downtown, more or less.
I didn't know about the name change.
That happened, was it last year? Like, the original owner, Paul, he sold and moved to Puerto Rico. But there's some other people in the hardcore scene that ended up buying it and just kind of, you know, altering it a little bit. Like, you go in there and it, for the most part, looks the same. I mean, they repainted the walls and redid some of the decor and, you know, fixed up the bathrooms a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, it's still the same place. But the local Cleveland company that I go to all the shows here in town, every August they run a show there. It's in the back parking lot, and the whole parking lot fills up with people, and it's a great time. But the other thing about this show is everyone gets fucked up. Every single person, whether you're a fan, a wrestler, one of the company employees, everybody gets fucked up on something. The amount of people that I saw finishing bottles of Mad Dog before the second match was done was appalling. I did not drink any of that shit because I am almost 40 years old and I have not touched that shit in over a decade, and I don't need to anymore.
I'm rolling a little Mad Dog, a little flavor boost. Yeah.
Listen, I like flavorful drinks.
Do
not,
you?
Trust me. I was drinking gin and tonics. I'll say that, and they caught on to me very late in the day. There was definitely a dude that pissed himself at one point during the show.
Now, did it come out the color of the Mad Dog he was drinking?
By the time that happened,
was he a blue Raz guy?
Yeah.
By the time that happened, I was gone. I was in another mode. But so I our listener Ed, he actually drove me to the show and drove me home. I know I was home and I know I had the race on because, like, when I sobered up enough, like, a few hours later to try to put myself together what the fuck happened, I looked at the fantasy points to see if I had won. I didn't, but I did see that I had put Blaney in the garage. So I clearly had it on and was paying attention for a while. But I woke up well after it was over. So
that was pretty early on then.
Yeah.
Blaney was out there.
So who won the points? Was it Chris?
Sean did.
Yarb.
Sean Harden.
Right. Sean Harden.
Wow.
Yeah, the Dale, number 3 league or whatever it's called, or Get Bent Grandpa or whatever we call it now.
Sean won. Our past guest, Mike, actually came up from 4th to finish 2nd. I stayed in 3rd. But I guess we'll see what happens in the playoffs now. I did end up winning, our past guest, every race he does a pool, like a fantasy league pool. I did win that. Which was cool, so I won a whole $9 out of that deal. Woo. But that's your betting update from my drunken Daytona night.
There you go. Yeah, I came in 6th this year in the regular season championship. I'm more of a playoff guy, though. You know,
you had a couple wins, and we'll see how the playoffs
I had a great
go.
Season until Loudon, and I forgot to update my lineup because the reset. Where I don't know if I forgot, got too drunk, or couldn't. Some combination of the three, because there's no fucking reception out there. So I just let it ride, and it just really did not work out. And then from then on, it was just back into the mud, and I settled down on 6. Very tight battle this year, though. So
yeah, it was good.
Fantasy NASCAR is fun.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone should do it. But the race itself happened, and you know, I saw all the highlights, so I guess let's talk about all the shit that went down.
I thought it was again. We're gonna get into the big flashpoint of this because there are some very ugly wrecks during this race. We'll get into that in a second. But I thought that was a pretty fantastic super speedway race. I don't know about you, True Love, but I really enjoyed the shit out of that.
Oh yeah, from start to finish, it was. I thought it was a solid race.
And just this,
I was also like on the verge of blacking out the whole time from stress and anxiety, but you know.
Yeah, well, I was blacked out for a much different reason.
Yeah, I felt pretty good. So it's rare that I'm the clear-headed one in the circle here, but you know.
I mean, I was sober, but
yeah. So I've been I've been on that Whole 30 thing, which is actually it's gone out the window now since I'm going to Albuquerque tomorrow. By the way, anybody in New Mexico listening, I'll be there through Labor Day. Let's go see Dwight Yoakam next Saturday. Let's do it, fuckers. And then we'll go see I Hate God downtown afterwards. Nice little doubleheader for you. But but yeah, I haven't been drinking, eating cheese, sugar, anything like that. So I was very sober for this race. And the energy of the whole thing, and maybe it was just in my head, but it seemed just palpable. It's like they finally got this championship cutoff race presented in the right way. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed the shit out of it, of course, until the unpleasantness later on. But yeah, I thought the cars, they looked great out there. They were twitchy. Everyone was very aggressive. And I heard some insight on, if you guys listen to Door Bumper Clear, they do a really good breakdown of this. A lot of the three-wide racing and sort of interchanging positions in the pack had to do with guys running at about 70%. Other people's deciding to make their runs during that time. So just based off differing strategies, et cetera. It just had it all. It was great. Yeah. And whatever they did there is pretty much what they kind of have to do from now on, I think, for those shows to be good, in my opinion. That is the gold standard. And I don't think it gets any better than that with this car on the super speedways. True Love, what do you think?
There's a lot of three-wide racing. Like, I felt like the entire stage two was three wide, and I wanted to vomit, but
and it was mostly, I mean, when they did wreck, it was ugly, but for the most part, that race was caution free,
which I do think a lot of super speedway races are, for the most part, at least in Cup, fairly caution free. It just ends up being one of those, maybe there's a wreck early, and you know, you figure there's going to be one in the last 10% of the race, at least one.
Yeah.
occasionally it doesn't happen, but that's usually how it works out.
Yeah. And this is sort of like the reason why this is going to sound like a contradiction, but I kind of fucking hate plate racing now. I'm just kind of over how every single fucking race ends exactly the same way. There's always a giant wreck, someone always looks like they died, and then everyone fucks each other up for a few laps, and there's a couple of green-white checkers, and, you know, it always comes down to that last lap, and just, you know, I know there's skill behind it, and you have to, you know, position yourself to be up front at the end of those things and survive, but it's such a slot machine, you know, and it always kind of has been, but it's just like, to have all that skill to navigate that traffic and do this incredible drafting and stay out of trouble the whole way, and then just throw it out the window at the end for out of desperation, it's just fucking lame, you know?
So I guess
I can agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess let's use this as the opportunity, especially since you have another DARF of the week. we'll get this out here. So
there's a lot of DARFs this week, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I already had this guy down in my notes as someone I thought was going to be a DARF, and technically he's not a DARF because he is a guy who's got a lot of experience in the industry, but there's a guy on Twitter named Brian Murphy who I think he's followed by a lot of racing fans follow him, and he tweeted out, "Super speedway racing has run its course. We need to end this unnecessary nonsense." And, you know, to play devil's advocate here, I can understand where he's coming from. If you want to talk about the safety aspect, I can empathize with what Rob's saying as far as, you know, yeah, it's this stressful, you know, chess match of a race until the very end, and then it, 9 times out of 10, it turns into a shit show. But I also think that Daytona, especially, but super speedway racing it's what makes NASCAR NASCAR. There's no other racing series that does what these cars do on such big tracks. And
no.
To me, it's like it is the whole, you know, Roman gladiator stadium aspect of it, and it is the heart and soul of NASCAR is Daytona. And you know, the cars are, for regardless of what you think about the wrecks and all that, the cars are still safer than they ever have been, even though they still have a lot of work to do to make the car as safe as it should be. But the cars are safer now than they ever have been. And every single weekend in America, every single sprint car that's on a track is at more risk than any cup car ever is.
Yeah, so, I have a hard time talking shit about plate racing when I watch sprint car racing as well, and I have no problem with that shit. Guys getting their spines whipped into the fucking, like, a chain link fence.
You know, I think it really, if anything, this is just a continuation of the argument that started, you know, almost 40 years ago when plates were first put on the cars. You know, like, how do you make these guys race in a way that's safe but also entertaining? And, you know, I don't know if you can, you know, especially at these speeds. You know, I think at this point, you can kind of just make everything as safe as possible. And, you know, there's still probably some work to be done on the cars to where, you know, maybe they don't run in as tight of packs, or something to where, you know, you can get cars to actually be able to pass better and not have to bump draft and all this other shit. I don't have those answers because I'm just a fan, but I can say that I feel like if you were to take away super speedway racing, it's taken away, you know, a big chunk of the heart and soul of the sport.
I agree to a certain extent. I definitely don't think you can get rid of it completely. I don't know. Getting rid of Daytona would be a travesty. But, you know, the one thing I really do agree 100% with you is what can be done? What can really be done about this? You know, like,
what
factor can be changed? So let's break it down here. So, of course, if those of you who may not have seen it, or, you know, or want to know exactly what we're talking about here, of course, Ryan Blaney took a huge hit, went firewall deep into the outside wall, got his bell rung, but he was ugly. But he got out of the car.
It was almost identical to Earnhardt's wreck. But again, 20 something years later, you got soft walls, you've got Hans devices, you know, you got all this other shit, and where,
right,
he got out of the car and he'll be in the car.
The bigger offender for me, and there might be some fandom involved in this as well, was Ryan Preece's wreck, flipping in the way he did, which was just incredibly violent. Like, you don't have to be a race fan to have seen that by now. That's probably the ugliest crash we've seen, visually speaking, in a long time. That was like some 1990s shit. It was visceral, and just...
I was about to say, it was very 90s flip. I would say with the difference with Priest's flip compared to those flips of the 90s is the fact that the car now, aside from the roof hatch, stays together so much more.
The window
so
that got
those,
ripped out too, so yeah, that's...
Those flips are so much quicker and more violent because the car isn't coming apart. You're not losing all that
energy. There's no dissipation, and there's a flat bottom too because all the aero is down. And that's kind of what I was going to get at, is like, look at all the elements involved here. The car itself, you know, obviously they'll take a look at the safety elements that failed, in this case being the window net and the roof hatch blowing off before he even really hit the ground, which is, that's not something that's supposed to happen at all.
Yeah.
But the entire aerodynamic design of the car is based on that tray underneath. Mm-hmm. So, and the car is settled. That's it. They can do little tweaks here and there to the structure and the crush zones on the car and make it where, you know, the energy is dissipated like they did with Blaney, you know, like where they put the bar in place where Newman got hit in the window. They can reinforce that stuff, and I'm sure they'll do some of that with Ryan's car. Yeah. But overall, it's not changing. The car is what it is. Daytona is not going to change. They're not going to suddenly change the package either because, you know, they're adding this style of racing. It used to be just Talladega and Daytona. Now they've got Atlanta in the mix, and Lord knows what else is going to come up next since people like this style of racing. Fans want to watch it. And, like, what out of all those things, none of that is changing. So what can you change? I would say it would be the situation you put these guys in when you make them race for a fucking playoff berth. So really, like, changing the way you award points and award a championship is really the only way you're going to kind of dial things down a little bit. But they're not going to get rid of that either. And that's pretty much every element that made that race what it was. So what happens, you know? And you're right, the cars are, they're not as safe as they ever have been, because the previous generation was much safer. We didn't see these concussions before and
yeah,
that sort of thing. And, you know, they are still very stiff, and these guys are getting hurt in these cars.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ryan Preece himself, you know, after, while he was in a hospital bed, tweeted out that if you want to be a race car driver, you got to be tough. I'll be back.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's kind of part of the deal, to be honest.
Like, people have brought up the Earnhardt candy ass comment. I don't know how many times. Again, this is not a safe sport, and nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. If nobody wants to see anybody die, and thankfully in NASCAR that has not happened in 20 something years.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah. If anything, I feel like, you know, and it's been brought up in other, like with the short track package too, like the underbody thing, like it looks like an Indy car now. Or
well, Dallara makes it. Dallara makes that. It's just makes the chassis. So, and they make the outer portions of the car. Maybe I'm wrong about that. So if somebody listening wants to call my bullshit, you know, but it is a Dallara straight up. And that's the same manufacturer as IndyCar and as a bunch of other sports cars, and it's designed off those same physics and concepts. So, and to take that and try and put it on a speedway like this, like, to me, like, the ultimate mistake was going that direction in the first place when designing a new car. But it's way too fucking late to do anything about it now. So, you know, it's kind of like watch or don't from a fan perspective, you know? True Love, what do you think? I don't mean to dominate the conversation here.
What's the question?
Well, just how do you feel about seeing accidents like that, and, you know, seeing situations like that, people are calling for the abolishment of Jesus. Brian's got he's got the drowning pool fired up. He's ready to rock. people are calling for the abolishment of super speedway racing out of this, as we do anytime there's a fucking accident. It was the same thing when Newman got, but, you know, it is dangerous, and I understand the reaction. So, like, what side of the fence do you sit on here?
I mean, I'm very pro super speedway racing. I mean, I guess maybe from being a fan for over 30 years, maybe I'm just like, I don't say you get numb to watching accidents like that, because my heart sank when I was watching Priest flip and my jaw was on the ground, and like it brought back like the same feelings I had waiting for Newman to climb out of the car a few years ago. But like, I don't know, we've just seen these wrecks. It's just what happens. And they're never going to get rid of super speedway racing, because honestly, that's the type of racing that brings in new fans. Like, any time over the years where I've been trying to get people to, that aren't NASCAR fans, to watch, those are the races that they want to watch. Those are the races that, like, get them sucked in and, like, so.
Agreed, yeah. Well, I mean, I had a friend of mine, Nikki, she lives in Daytona now. She went to her first race over the weekend. And she was the very fucking first row, and the entrance to the trioval was right where Blaney hit, or
that's not
right
where
after.
I would be sitting.
Well, she got it for free, and she's like, "Hell yeah, we got front row seats!" And I was like, "You know, those are the cheap seats, right?" Yeah. She's like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" But again, the whole time we were kind of texting back and forth, and she was like, "This is incredible! Like the smell, like the wind after the pack passes, like they're touching each other. What the fuck is this?" And like, there really is no greater spectacle in NASCAR than super speedway racing. It really isn't.
No.
Yeah, especially for new fans.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, it's one of those situations where I think everybody's right and everybody's wrong at the same time, and there is no answer other than to do the little small things to make it more tenable. And I feel like that's what NASCAR has tried to do. Again, they're trying to fix this car to make it safer. And I feel like if they hadn't have done some of the adjustments, like drilling holes into the clip up front and the structure in the front of the car, you know, Blaney might have been out for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And the fact that Ryan Preece, at least at the time of recording, is still racing next weekend and is not on concussion protocol, that's a miracle. And I think you at least have to attribute a good amount of that to the safety of the car and the way that the driver is cradled in there. Even though parts of the safety mechanism failed, he got out. He climbed out of the car. It's incredible. Like,
I wasn't expecting him to climb out of that car. I was expecting him to have to physically get him out of that car.
I mean, I went through the whole gamut of, again, I don't know Ryan Preece at all. But I've watched him for, 10, 15 years up here at the short tracks in New England. I didn't watch him grow up by any means, but it's actually less than 15. But around the time that Ryan won his first mod championship, that was kind of when I started tuning in and going to the racetrack around here. And so it's just, years of watching him sort of ascend from that level, from Stafford and Thompson all the way up to the Cup Series. Mm-hmm. And, when you see something like that, there is an element of like, holy shit, that's it. Not that he's dead necessarily, but I mean, Kurt Busch just retired from an accident that looked, exponentially less worse than both Blaney and Preece's. Mm-hmm. He's done. And that, I was thinking like, wow, that's probably his career right there.
That's the thing. I can't think of any flip that's happened in my lifetime where anybody got like seriously, seriously hurt.
But it was
maybe,
just the speed of the spins and that final impact into the ground and how it sort of like spun in the air and the air and it dropped straight down. It's like a sprint car wreck, when those guys land.
It was a little bit, yeah.
When they land flat on the ground and their spine compresses, that's when you have injuries. That's like similar to like what this paralyzed a lot of. That's like Kevin Swindell's wreck, gotten killed from similar deals. And obviously sprint cars are different, but it reminded me of that. And you can get concussed from that pretty easily.
What Denny said on his show was what probably saved him was the fact that he never ever landed on all four wheels like straight up. Like it was always like rolling and like at an angle or whatever. But yeah, if he landed on all four wheels flat, he probably would have been hurt a lot more.
Yeah,
so
very, very lucky. And again, just again, as the time,
that's how Amarola broke his back.
Well, he got hit in the rear and then
landed
he came down flat.
Down.
Yeah, at Kansas. That was ugly. That was another one of those moments where it looked bad, but it didn't look like this. And, then of course they're cutting the top off the car and bringing the tarp out and all that. It's like, oh my God. But that's the thing I think people need to realize is that, and this might be an inappropriate usage of the term, but it's kind of a blood sport a little bit. It's not like, gladiators fighting fucking lions or Christians fighting lions in the middle of an arena, though it kind of is if you're Michael McDowell, but it is, incredibly risky. Like, it's fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
And if anything, you've worked really hard to ascend yourself to the safest level of racing in the United States, because you come to places like Seekonk and you see all the rust on the fence and you realize, holy fuck, we could all die right now if something goes sideways. So I think that's part of the, and this might be an opinion that people don't agree with, but I think that's part of the appeal, is that it's incredible, and it's on the edge of what's the word I'm looking for here? It's just fucking dangerous, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Like I said, I want the cars to be as safe as possible, but I think, if you tried to water down the sport more and make it, cut all the risks out to where, no one's ever got a chance of even getting slightly hurt. I mean, it's just not, what the sport was. It's not what the sport is, and it's not what it was, and it's not the heart. Racing is dangerous. Again, like you said, any type of racing is dangerous.
It's on the fucking ticket.
Matter.
When you buy a ticket to any race, it's on the back.
Aside from just sprint cars, look at fucking Indy cars. Look at goddamn drag racing. People are sitting on fucking 1,500 horsepower balls of goddamn fire for 5 seconds. Like,
that's so sick.
Racing is not fucking safe.
It's not safe to breathe in either if you're at those nitro races. But God, we all got to get to an NHRA deal one of these days. I've only been to one. It was fucking incredible. But
It's one of I've been to one myself, and like I have the opportunity. Like, I can go to Norwalk whenever I want, but I don't know. They're tough. It's you got to walk around and look at everything, I guess, because if you're just sitting there waiting for racing, it's to me, it's just, I don't know, man. Like, there's only so many hours that I can fucking take. It's cool though. Don't get me wrong. It is wild to see those guys run.
Yeah.
But it's a slog sitting through it.
Yeah, it is a little bit, but
Well, we talked about the not quite DARF of the week. And I don't know what else. Do we have any other notes? I mean, I was definitely surprised to see Buescher win, but I also wasn't totally surprised because, like, I think most anybody I bet on or put in my lineup were all Fords, so it wasn't a shock to see those two guys up front at the very end.
No, I think that's probably the only place I would have expected Buescher to win, to be honest with you. Outside of, like, Bristol, maybe Martinsville, something like that, but they've got something going on. Like, I think Buescher's certainly not a round of 16 exit.
No,
I think they're going to go pretty deep.
I'd be a little bit shocked to see him make the final four, but not that shocked. I mean, I was probably less shocked than Chastain making it last year, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, who's not going?
I'm shocked that he's had 3 wins at this point.
Yeah, out of last five races.
Yeah.
That's a little Larry McNugget for you.
He's worn off.
Yeah, he's full on. He's full on Christopher now. He's. oh man! Yeah, congrats. Any other?
Brad driving in circles under the red flag.
That was fucking funny. I don't understand how he didn't get penalized for that.
Yeah, same.
So for those of you who may have missed it on the, did it make the broadcast or was this more of like a Twitter thing?
I never saw it on the broadcast.
So for those of you who might not have seen this. Brad Keselowski during the red flag, I believe for Ryan Preece, because that was the only red flag of the day. I think there was a header fire or something, a piece of rubber stuck in the headers, and he wanted to put it out. And so he started driving around in circles on the apron during a red flag. Kind of unannounced, it seems. Which I don't understand how that's not a penalty, but whatever, it's
at
all
least
good.
Put him at the end of the line.
Yeah, the fire got put out, though, and he ended up... getting a nice finish out of it.
A lot of good radio content from the other drivers watching that.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah, the Bowman stuff was funny. I saw that. I guess the one thing that the one reaction that I saw, I mean, people compared to the Sterling Marlin Daytona incident, which was a little different, but not totally different. I mean, I guess because he was on fire, maybe that's why they kind of let it slide. Like, if he had
Sterling
stopped,
also got out of his fucking car. Which
yeah,
is,
there's that too. Totally different.
That's a no-no.
I guess that's where maybe that's why they let it slide. You know, I guess if somebody had to put it out, he would have been done, I think. Correct me if
said,
I'm wrong.
You know,
but
all the safety cars were down there and turned for whatever dealing with Preece,
yeah
so.
The whole field was wrecked on the other side, and so there was nobody to respond to it, so he took matters into his own hands, which he should have, but it's just the funniest shit I've seen all day. I guess that's something you don't want to show on television, some clown car circus shit while everyone thinks that maybe somebody's fucked up on the other side of the racetrack. So
that's true.
Yeah, they're a nice dichotomy of action on the track. Yeah. Jesus.
But yeah, I thought that was a great race. All that aside, and I guess that leads to my DARF of the week, which is Jalopnik rider Elizabeth Blackstock. Now, Jalopnik is pretty trash in general. It seems like a lot of people who don't know a whole lot about cars writing about cars, as if it's like Pitchfork or something like that. Am I far off in that assessment?
I will say that this is the girl that gave me and Brian free tickets to the SRX race at Nashville.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Whoops.
Well, she had to sub in some experts, so.
I don't think she listens to the show, so it doesn't matter.
And if you do, again, you're entitled to your opinion, and, you know, it's fine. It is what it is. I don't like who you write for, and I don't like your opinion, but that's okay. That's the beauty of this country and this world, is that we can say the things that we want to, and also have a beer at the end of the day. But anyway, like, the article is called "It's Time for NASCAR to Rethink Super Speedway Racing." It basically repeats all these talking points about, you know, basically what the guy you mentioned, Brian, said. And actually, it's not so much Elizabeth, I guess, because her opinion's pretty box standard of that, you know, the kind of person that has that opinion. It's the comments below suggesting that NASCAR switches to more road courses to combat this, and maybe if it was more like a GT series. And so basically, if you commented on this article with a suggestion, you are my DARF of the week. So not so much Elizabeth, but, you know, I will give her the title simply because she brought the collection of morons together in her comment section. So Elizabeth, I punish you to giving us all more SRX tickets when they go to Saudi Arabia.
Oh, we forgot to talk about that too. The next racing series that wants some blood money. Listen, Tony's about to be cashing out some fucking charters. He's gonna be cashing in some SRX blood money in Saudi Arabia. Paul Tracy will absolutely be there.
Oh, I don't doubt that
for
shit.
A half a second. Listen, lady. These cars are already enough like sports cars as it is. We don't need them more like sports cars. So yeah,
they are sports cars. That's problem.
You know what I mean.
But yeah, like to what you were saying though, that the spirit of NASCAR is a certain thing, and you know, there's already too much road racing involved. And I guess you could argue that this style of plate racing is also not really tied in with the true roots of NASCAR. It's only been around about 35, 40 years, something like that. Less than that. What, 35 years? 87?
36, technically.
36 yeah. years, yeah. So that's not totally fully canonical either, but, you know, I guess things can change. But, yeah, I don't know. It seems like looking for a solution where there isn't one. And just watch Formula One or something else where I think more people die in their feeder series than anywhere else. So
there you go.
I think she does watch more Formula One than anything else.
It seems like it. Yeah.
But, we'll stick to that.
But again, thank you for giving our friends or my friends, you know, some tickets to that, and keep up the good work. So, if you want to have them out, you know, ignore me. This is my own opinion. Don't want to ruin their VIP thing. No, I will apologize for, you know, some fucking Indy 500 tickets or something.
Yeah. Well, in exchange for the tickets. She was like writing an article about it afterwards, and she didn't even write the article. She just took literally everything that I said word for word and put quotation marks around it and said, here's my article. So.
Well, Ashley, you are my favorite Jalopnik writer then, that's for sure.
There we go.
Yeah, that's my Darf of the Week.
Yeah, that's, well, very fitting Darfs of the Week this week, I feel like. So I guess that takes us to the video of the week segment, and this week we got a nice departure from what we watched last week. Let's just say that, although not necessarily the most thrilling video this week, but it's a topic that I've been wanting to watch for a minute and been putting off for a variety of reasons. We've talked about this numerous times, and this segment in general is part of my YouTube and vintage racing watching strategy, I guess, but watch a lot of old races, and part of watching these old races is seeing, you know, being entertained by some of the backmarker drivers and just drivers you necessarily never heard of. Mm-hmm. One of the names that always sticks out to me when I see it is Trevor Boyes. Trevor was a guy who only drove, he had 102 starts in the Cup Series. He's a driver from Canada. This video is done by Brock Beard, who's one of the handful of YouTubers that we've talked about on the show before that we're all fans of. He does a lot of really cool historical content, and Brock himself, he tends to focus on a lot of the backmarker guys. Like, he's got his Last Car series where he talks about guys.
Rise of the Field Fillers.
Rise of the Field Fillers. All these things where he does a lot of focus on drivers that you might have only seen, you know, reading the Cup scene or in clips in starting lineups when you're watching old races, right, and whatnot.
But I will say that a lot of his content is not really entry level. Like, it might be a little boring if you're not interested in the subject, but if you're into deep cut history and you really want to start learning stuff about the Winston Cup era and beyond, and just people who, you know, like Brian said, may not have been in the spotlight, pretty much everything he does is fucking fascinating. But
Brock, Trevor Boyes was a Canadian race car driver who, like a lot of guys who started racing in the 70s, he started out racing open wheel cars, some Formula 4 stuff, USAC stuff. His original goal was to get to the Indy 500, but because of the cost of entry and also because of the friendliness of the competitors, he decided to stick out with stock cars, first starting in the Winston West Series and later making his way to the Cup ranks. And out of all Canadian drivers who have ever raced in the Cup Series, Trevor has more starts than all of them combined. That includes the Villeneuves, the Patrick Carpentiers, the Ron Fellows. Any Canadian that's ever driven in Cup add all their starts up, Ron's, or, you know, Trevor still has more than them.
And would you do me a favor and spell his last name for the listeners out there?
B-O-Y-S. That's Boys.
Right. Mr. Boys. Trevor Boys.
Trevor Boys, yep. So I'll say this, too, because they mentioned their names later on, but some other interesting names from this era that I loved and I would like to eventually learn more about. Connie Saylor. Love Connie Saylor's name. Great name. And then the classic Slick Johnson. Probably one of the people give Dick Trickle, you know, the title, the best name in NASCAR. Slick Johnson's got to be right up there.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah,
certainly in the ballpark.
So yeah, Trevor was a guy that just got his start, like I said, in the open wheel ranks, and eventually made his way to NASCAR. And he, in 1983, he battled with. Is it 83 or 84?
It's 83.
Yeah, 83. He battled with Sterling Marlin for the Rookie of the Year title, and he almost won. It was very close. You know, Trevor missed the first seven races until getting a ride with James Hilton. And he actually, out of the all the races that he actually entered with Sterling, he finished ahead of Sterling most of them. But he ended up, you know, getting a good amount of not so much coverage in the media, but I mean, he got a lot of respect from his competitors, you know, being a Canadian that nobody had really heard of. And he drove well. He didn't drive like a dickhead. And a lot of guys were really nice and friendly to him. And NASCAR, you know, didn't necessarily have the same drive to get international drivers then that they did, you know, they do now. But NASCAR encouraged him and tried to help him find rides and find sponsors and things like that. And well, I wouldn't say it's a tragedy, but I think one of the bummers when watching a lot of these old races is, compared to, you know, the TV coverage of today, you don't get any real coverage of who is where in the field when the race is happening. Like, go watch any race from the 80s. It wasn't until probably the mid-90s that they had not only a ticker for the full field, but even a you know, line up for the top 20 drivers, or, you know, it that technology didn't really start until, you know, 25-ish years ago.
Right.
So when Trevor was around, you know, when I'm watching these old races, he's half the time he's in the top 10 running. Like, he's actually running very well. He's had a lot of top 15, top 20 finishes, only a couple top 10s, but at least in the 83 and 84 seasons, he did fairly well. He actually, in 84, the only year that he ran every single race, but he ended up winning the Chameleon, what's the award here? Some Chameleon Hard Charger Award, basically the driver that improved the most amount of positions throughout the season. Like, he won that, and, you know, a driver with next to no sponsorship, really kind of a backmarker team, to win that is pretty cool. And there was an 85, it must have been a precursor to the Winston, some sort of invitational race in Atlanta.
Invitational, yeah. Yeah.
Trevor was voted in by his competitors to be in that race, which is a very cool thing to see. And, you know, he ran a handful of races, you know, after that 85 season. He was kind of bouncing around teams. He was between DK Ulrich and James Hilton. You know, he ran a couple other races for a couple random teams here and there. He actually ran a couple races in the first ever Kodak Cup car, which was, I believe, the 98 was the number there.
Yeah,
94. It was 94. That's right. Before they went with Morgan McClure, he ran a couple fill-in races for those guys. But again, never really got a good ride. There was a quote. Let me look here. Basically, to paraphrase it, he was always better than his equipment, and I think especially back then, people defined him by what he drove. They thought his driving style was why he finished where he did, not so much because of his equipment. I think in 85 especially, like, he was DNFing quite a bit as opposed to 83 and 84 where he was finishing top 20 in a lot of his races. So that was definitely a big problem. You know, Trevor was a guy that in this video talks about he, unlike a lot of drivers, a lot of peers at the time, like, he actually went out of his way to try to find sponsors and really work for the team and not just get in the car and do his thing. He was a guy that never really won too many races in any sort of car, but he just was there and he just tried. And you know, I think now, especially, with how media is, it's so much easier to pay attention to those smaller teams if you're a fan. Whereas in the 80s and 90s, those guys didn't get the attention. There wasn't the media coverage. You couldn't, you know, you had to basically join a fan club more or less for some of these guys to find out what the hell is going on with them, because all you'd get was just their finishing positions and maybe a blurb in the cup scene or something like that. And Trevor was one of those guys, and never really got his due. You know, who knows what he could have done had he gotten in a real top ride. And he was attempted to get his son, who Wheeler Boys, which, again, another great fucking name. They started a team called Boys Will Be Boys to try to get his kid into NASCAR. And, you know, Trevor was the last cup driver to drive the 48 car for James Hilton until Jimmy Johnson got in the 48 car. And it was up until 2009 he was still making attempts at Xfinity and Truck Series starts.
Yep, started the Montreal race, or tried to start the Montreal race.
Yeah, he did make it in two of the first two Montreal races. Both he and his son did start the race. So,
his dad's, you know, this name is, was Buddy Boys.
Buddy Boys, yes. Didn't even get into Buddy Boys. Jesus Christ. Just so many awesome names in this video. Like, the whole Boys family, just wonderful. All the best names. Love it. Wheeler I am Boys. On the hunt. The only piece of Trevor Bain merch I've ever seen is a patch that I ended up losing in an auction. So if Trevor anybody Bain. Out there.
You mean Trevor Boys?
Trevor Bain, Trevor Boys. Anybody has any Trevor Boys merch out there? Please get in contact with him because I want all of it. And he's a guy that, you know, in my own business, you know, I'm not a person that likes to do too many retro designs, but he would be a guy that I would love to do a Trevor Boys shirt for, because I don't think any exist. So maybe eventually I'll contact the family and see if they're into that. But this is like Rob was saying, this is a good history lesson. Not the most thrilling video in the world, but I think if you're a listener of this show, there's probably a good chance that there's at least a couple independent backmarker drivers that you keep an eye on. So in that spirit, this is well worth checking out.
And if you decide to go down the wormhole of watching Winston Cup races, or from any era really, and you see a name that kind of tickles your fancy, or you find out a little tidbit about somebody, there's a good chance that there's some content about them on the internet that either Slap Shoes or NASCAR Man and Brock Beard put together. So, and again, both of those channels are worth checking out.
Absolutely. Ashley, you got any notes about this video?
About the boys.
No, I don't think I really had any extra notes. I mean, you know, like you said, it's always a name that you hear watching old races, but that's the extent of it. So it's just a little lesson in his stats and
for sure. I do think though it was the few tidbits here and there where it seemed like he got along very well with his competitors and was well respected. Again, that's something you don't necessarily always hear about people. So yeah, just nice thing to hear. So that was good.
Agreed.
I think it was interesting that he said he was offered $200 a day to
that was
help
another note.
Film for Days of Thunder, but he declined to do that.
He said he couldn't afford to stay in Florida at that rate, which I guess makes sense. I don't know. Who the hell knows what he was doing at that point? Maybe he was working for a race team somewhere else, and it made more sense to go do that. But yeah, interesting. Any Days of Thunder tidbit perks my ears right up. So
yeah.
But yeah, that was the video of the week. Trevor Boys, the story of Trevor Boys, about a half an hour on YouTube, and that'll be in the video of the week playlist. And that brings us to Labor Day weekend. NASCAR is in Darlington, and I know Rob and I were talking about going, but it doesn't sound like either one of us will be there. Rob's got all sorts of stuff going on in his personal life. With none of my friends going, I'm a little less motivated to go now, so I will probably just be watching from here in my house.
Yeah.
I told you who's going that you can go with.
Who's going?
Oh, Cornbread.
Oh, I don't want to fucking go with that guy. Do you know how many dickheads? Oh, fuck, he hears this show, too. I hope he doesn't still listen. I saw a video of him going through his T-shirt collection and trying to explain, and it's like, dude, you don't even know who half these drivers are. It's killing me here.
Biting the hand that feeds us tonight.
He was also explaining how because the shirts are 50-50 blend, they all stretch and fit him. So it's like, all right, well, that's... glad that you think that, but
yeah, fit's not the word I would use, but he can wear them.
So yeah, no, I will not be hanging out with him at the race, unfortunately. But I have decided that I think I'm going to be, and Rob, you'll be excited about this, I think I'm going to go to Lernerville to see Larson's tour.
There you go.
Next month. Especially, I mean, Dale Jr. said he's going to be there. Not that that's like my selling point, but it's like, it'd be interesting. That Lernerville is only about 2 hours from here, so got to check out the entry list and see who's going to be going. But
any 410 show is a good one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The car counts have been dwindling a little bit, but still, they'll probably have about 25, 30 cars there. It'll be a good show.
Yeah, I've been looking for an excuse to go to Lernerville this year, so it's Tuesday night. That's a pretty good one, so probably be doing that.
Hell yeah.
But you guys, obviously Rob and I aren't doing anything. Ashley, you doing any racing stuff this weekend, or just watching with the rest of us?
Just watching. I mean, I don't know if any racing going on around here. There's a couple car shows. Maybe I'll go to one of those, but...
I gotta see if any Attica stuff's going on, Attica or Fremont, because I wouldn't be opposed to going out there for a race, but I haven't checked in a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff happening in New England. I'm just going to be in Albuquerque. And there is a dirt track out there, but it's not doing well, and they only draw like 2 cars per division, and I'm not spending $10 to do that when Dwight Yoakam is playing the same night. So that's kind of is what it is.
Yeah, you're making the right choice there.
I've seen Dwight before, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then I Hate God's playing the same night, too, so that's going to be very different worlds and different smells.
Did you say you're doing both of those?
Yeah. Well, Dwight's
gonna
be
night?
Yeah. Well, Dwight's gonna be done by like 9, and I Hate God's not playing till like midnight. I bet, so I can get across Albuquerque for that.
Dwight's a little elderly. Yeah. He's gotta get to bed.
Yeah, he's exactly.
He can only shake his leg for so long.
Yeah, it takes an hour to get the jeans off him at the end of the night. So they gotta unsew him and all that. But
and ungrease his, ungrease him up.
Yeah. But yeah, some good racing this weekend. World of Outlaws are up north in Washington. The Skagit Nationals, that's always fun.
It's a fun word.
Yeah, Skagit, say that.
I've had many Skagit Speedway shirts.
You've had many Skagit past, so. In your life?
Yeah. Whoa, watch, be careful there. Good lord.
Beep that out.
Yeah, Jesus.
Oh, by the way, the All-Star Circuit of Champions are going to be at Attica on Friday, so that's something for you, Brian.
Oh, okay, well then I'll probably do that then.
It's also Championship Night at Utica Rome. That's always fun. What the fuck else is happening?
I know it's the last regular season race at Lebanon Valley this weekend, so I don't know. I will probably not be watching that. I think they have some feed, though. I don't know where the hell you can watch that stuff, but...
yeah.
You know, I might try to check that out.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Lucas Oil Late Models are at Portsmouth, too. That's always going to be fun. And then I believe there's some World of Outlaws racing on Monday, too. So if you got Dirt Vision, that's something to look at. Cool. So.
Sweet. Well, I guess that will end this trip to the Chinese buffet next to Applebee's this week. As always,
Hunan
you can follow
Palace.
Us. Yes. As always, you can follow us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram, which I just stupidly noticed the other day. When you have it all, you know, one word like that on Instagram, it's basically meet at Applebee's. meet Applebee's.
I said that day one when we came up with the name.
Well, Ashley, I smoke a lot of weed, so I don't know. I'm sorry, I forgot that 6 months ago, whatever. But yeah, that got me the other night. But yeah, meet me at Dubbies on Twitter. We had a tiny bit of interaction there this weekend, thanks to listener Ed. That's probably the only. He also gave me shit for not answering his question of the week a few weeks ago on, because he asked me on Twitter instead of just like texting me, like an actual human being. Which was just basically, what are we watching on the NASCAR Classics deal? Which is, you know, whatever. I am SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com, Speedway Screens and all the things, and here's Ashley with her plugs.
Yeah, Snake Mountain underscore Trula.
Oh, no.
Energetic enough.
Oh, no. You want to try that again? Oh, my God.
I'm just gonna just quit the show.
Oh, God. Are you done with your plugs?
That's it.
Okay, that's it.
Y'all know where to find me.
Rob Motz underscore unofficial on Instagram. My band's called These Wild Plains. I actually do have some stuff to talk about since it's almost September. I've mentioned all this on the show before, but I'm going to put it all in one spot here. Monday, September 25th, you can catch us in Providence, opening for American Aquarium. That's going to be nice and fun. North Carolina and Charlotte folks, we're going to be at the Thirsty Beaver Saloon. That's always a fucking blast, my favorite bar in the world. And then the next night, October 14th, we're going to be in Richmond, Virginia, playing with the Wilson Springs Hotel at, where the fuck is that place? The Camel, which is one of our favorite spots to play. Also going to have some new music coming out around that time, and then more details about that once it happens. But those are the only three shows we have booked for the rest of the year. So if you want to come party, come party.
Cool. Well, folks, thank you once again for joining us at Applebee's, and we will be back next week to talk about all the racing nonsense yet again.